We are here in part today to honor God, but we've set aside time as well today to honor our seniors. And I'd like to start my message today with giving you some of my memories of some of my family. I never knew either sets of my grandparents very much. My dad's mom died a few months after her birth, so I never knew her at all. My dad's dad died when I was about 4 years old, and I only have a couple of fleeting memories of him. He came to live with us for a short time after he had a stroke, and he died a few months after that. My mom's mom died when I was 5. I have more memories of her because she had a cookie jar. And every time mom would go to visit her mother, she'd take us boys with her. And grandma always had the cookie jar stocked. And she also had this black rocker, an armless rocker in her kitchen. And anytime she had a sit-down task in her kitchen, she would sit in that rocking chair and do whatever it was she was doing. My mom's dad, she died a few years after that, and my mom's dad then moved to Florida. He remarried a couple of years later, and the woman he married was the lady that I knew as grandma. That's the one I spent the most time with. My dad worked at General Motors, and every year around Christmas time, rather than trying to deal with everybody that wanted to have time off, they just closed the plant for that week. Since us boys were out of school as well during that week, mom and dad would simply pack up the car and we would go to Florida to visit grandpa and grandma. We always saw them that time of year. That was pretty much the only time of year that we could make time to go see them. And this was still a time when long-distance phone calls were very expensive. Some of you remember that. It was quite a thing to make a long-distance phone call. Grandma would write a letter every couple of months, keep us updated. But that simply was not enough to really get to know them. My relationship with my grandparents changed when I graduated from high school. Before I went to Ambassador College, there was a couple of years in there, I would take just about every holiday weekend, every vacation time I had, and I would drive down by myself to visit my grandparents. I had been in that part of Florida enough that there were no longer any sites that I had to go see. And so I pretty much went down just to be with them, just to visit with them. I learned what it was like for my grandfather, especially. I spent the most time sitting and talking with him, what it was like for him growing up. He has a strong, or had a strong, mischievous streak to him when he was a boy. And he had a very oblique way of looking at life's circumstances. I think I inherited that from him. I learned that he only finished the eighth grade because he was needed on the farm. And you would have never known it to talk with him. Didn't mean that he was not a smart man. I learned shortly before his death that he had two patents to his name, one for a self-feeding soldering gun and one for a self-leveling plane. The only thing I wanted of Grandpa's when he died were those patents. I had an uncle that got them. I'm going to try to talk him out of them. Some years later, after I had married Roxanne, we went to Florida for the feast, I believe it was. I was curious at that time to know more of the family history. I had done some research, and on my dad's side, the genealogy was fairly straightforward. But on my mom's dad's side, it was a huge blank. There was nothing there. And what was more curious is that nobody in the family knew anything. So we were there. I was in his house. He was sitting in his chair. He had this ability to do this thing with his two fingers in the middle. He could curl them up and slide them between the other two fingers. I never knew how he did that, but he'd sit in his chair and he'd do that. And he was sitting there, and I decided the time was right. I just asked. I didn't know what the reason was. I didn't know at the time that nobody was supposed to ask that question. Grandpa sat up in his chair. He cleared his throat. He paused for a moment, and then he told me some of his history. History that nobody in the family ever knew. For decades, I thought my ancestry from his side of the family was German because the parents that raised him, their last name was Imhoff. What I found out, that he was raised by that aunt and uncle, that was another part of the extended family. Those were not his parents, but I assumed it was. The reality was that my grandfather and his brother, he had a sibling, an older brother, were both born out of wedlock. Now, this is the early 1900s, 1901, 1902. And you can imagine the scandal in the family that was. What made it worse was that his biological parents never married. They lived together their whole lives, never married. The reality is that his biological parents' ancestry were English. The name was Johnson. I found that very interesting. No one in the family had ever talked about his family, so no one knew any of this. But this bit of news made sense of something my grandfather would do at funerals. Most of my mom's family is buried in this one cemetery outside a small town of Riley, Ohio. And so anytime a family member died, that's pretty much where they would be buried. And at some point after the funeral service, people were standing around their condolences, having conversations and such, and somebody would look up and they would say, "Where's Dad? Where's Grandpa?" And they'd look across the cemetery. He'd be by himself over in this one spot, and if anyone started to walk that way to be with him, he would start walking back. He wouldn't let them come there. That spot was where his grandmother was buried, or his mother, sorry, was buried. She never had a marker on her grave. And to this day, no one knows where that is. Some of the family has tried to figure it out. No one knows. It's never been marked. What made the story even sadder is that he continued to live in the same little town where they were. He knew who his mother was, his father. He never lived with him. He would see her from time to time, but he never really spent any time with her. On a lighter note, my grandfather told me of his hunting stories. And I've used some of those stories in my sermons, how he hunted, how he trapped, and what animals he would seek out to feed his family. Pretty much, if it moved, it was considered potential food. And he hunted just about everything. My aunt, my mom's sister, her only sister, told me they had a rain barrel at the side of the house, and they would use that for outdoor washing stuff. But if that rain barrel had a lid on it, they were to leave it alone. Because if it had a lid on it, that meant there was a snapping turtle in the barrel, and they were keeping it until they were going to make turtle soup. I can't imagine eating turtle soup from a snapping turtle. They are such foul creatures. Anyway, he rarely talked about the daughter that died. She died in a fire. Her nightgown caught, brushed rather, a kerosene heater that they used, and her nightgown caught on fire, and she died from the burns. He never complained or considered himself to have had a hard life, but he did. He fixed all manner of equipment and appliances. He loved to tinker with things. He fixed his own car, I think, pretty much until he died. I rarely took it in to have somebody else service it. The one story I liked is that the way he would winterize his car is that he would put moonshine in the radiator so that the fuel lines and such wouldn't freeze up. Plus, if you broke down, you had something warm to drink. I'm kidding. He read constantly. He was a reader of everything. A lot of news he would watch, but he faithfully read and studied his Bible every day. He had an impact on my life probably more than anyone else besides my parents, and I miss him. I miss him deeply and look forward to seeing him again in God's kingdom. One of the sad realities of the modern culture around us is the social disconnect we have in our families, physical distances, different lives, separation of the generations. Not only do we lose out on stories such as this, family history, we lose out on knowledge acquired. I wished I'd known how Grandpa came up with those ideas for those patents, how he figured that out. But we also lose out on wisdom, and even to be directed by the experience of someone who has faced life's challenges. Today I want to remind all of us of the wealth of the knowledge, wisdom, and experience we can have in our relationship with the older members we have here in the congregation. And so the title of my sermon today is The Hoary Head. I get that from Leviticus 19. That's from the Old King James. God was giving instruction to Israel, specifically in this book, Leviticus, is a book on how to be holy before God. So it talks about all manners of things in terms of relationships, moral laws, ceremonial laws, how to observe and worship before God, and so forth. And in chapter 19 here, in verse 32, God says this, "You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Eternal." Now in the King James, the Old King James, it says, "You shall rise before the hoary head." Simply means gray. But in light of all of the instruction here, if you'd read the rest of the chapter, this verse stands alone. God's not talking about these kind of relationships in the rest of the chapter. He's talking about false worship. He's talking about laws of morality. He's talking about ceremonial laws. And then he says this, that we're to rise up before the aged. I find that very interesting and telling. The conclusion I've come to is that someone who is older has a perspective on life that youth simply cannot. They've simply seen more of it. When we're young, we don't always see the effect of things down the road. I've got my own stories of that. You know, there's the old saying that God watches over drunk fools and children. And there was more than one time I wasn't drinking, and I was no longer a child, and God was watching over me. There's only three, so figure out which one. When we're young, we think we're immortal, right? The world is never going to end. We have life by the short hairs. We have all the time in the world. There's no mistake or challenge too hard to overcome. One of the values of age is to have a balanced perspective of life, a wisdom to know when you do things and when you don't do things, and what things will come about by decisions made, how to weather the life, the ups and downs, rather, of life, what things in life have value, and so forth. Another one of the interesting things about my grandfather was that during the Great Depression, he taught himself water engineering so that he could get a job at the local water treatment plant because they were hiring. He didn't know water engineering. So he checked out books and he did whatever he needed to do to qualify, and he did that to provide for his family. He had 6 kids, I think it was. He looked down the road and he knew he needed a skill that would provide steady employment. You could find day work here and there occasionally, but he wanted a steady job that would guarantee his family would be taken care of. Here in Leviticus 19, verse 32, the expression in the New King James, gray head, can literally be translated from the Hebrew, "You shall rise up before old age." This is a matter of respect. And the Bible Illustrator Commentary has some interesting points here about this verse I found very worth repeating. Point number one, they say, is that they see this verse that God is telling us to give homage to those of age because age represents wisdom. Do we recognize that? Because, and the second one is because the age record record long years spent in our service. You know, oftentimes when we're young, we don't appreciate the sacrifice that those that have gone before us make. You know, my dad, another story, when he came into the church, he was working at General Motors, as I said. He didn't have enough seniority. He was working second shift. He didn't have enough seniority to work first shift. Well, to keep the Sabbath, you can't work second shift. So he bumped to third shift, which meant 11 at night, 7 in the morning. Now, the way he did this was, Sunday, he would go in at 11 at night, and he would work till 7. He'd come home Monday morning, he'd sleep. He followed that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, when he came home, he stayed up. Did everything with the family. Friday night, he would go to bed. Saturday, go to church, go to bed. Sunday, when he got up, he'd stay up, and then he went to work Sunday night. He did that for 11 years. I tried third shift one time. I don't think I made a week. I was falling asleep on the drive home, almost killed myself. I couldn't do it. I don't know how he did it for 11 years. Third point, Bible Illustrator Commentary says, is because the age demonstrate God's providential care, that we know what God's going to do because we see what he has done for those before us. Fourth point, because the aged are solemn admonitions of life's decay. Ecclesiastes talks about this. Better to be in the house of mourning, to be reminded. We don't have all the time in the world. And it will move faster than you ever think. Number five, because the age marked the line of God's covenant blessings for descendants. And six, because the age represent on earth him who is the Ancient of Days. That's a very interesting thing. Another really sad thing about our culture is that the family has been shattered, and most people don't have a concept of what a loving God is, loving Father, I should say. Turn with me, if you will, to Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16 and in verse 31. Solomon writes this. He says, "The silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness." You know, many people, many women especially, will try to color their hair as they grow older, thinking that gray shows weakness or that they're not as young as they used to be, many of these kind of things. But God says this is an honor. If it's in righteousness, it's an honor. The Bible in basic English translates this verse this way: "The gray head is a crown of glory if it is seen in the way of righteousness." That's very interesting. In other words, all of our experiences in life should lead us to be closer to God. For those of us that are younger, those of us especially that are very young, you should look at those that are older in our congregation, and you should be able to see God's instruction in their lives. At the very least, ask them the questions so they can tell you how they have seen God's hand in their lives. Living His way of life, obeying God's instruction, taking on His character, will bring us to that righteousness. And that takes time to learn. Life is not a clean-cut process, is it? We learn along the way. We're here in Proverbs. If you turn over a couple of chapters, Proverbs 20, verse 29. Proverbs 20, verse 29, Solomon writes, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head." Some translations say the wisdom of old men. Right? So, the old men know to ask the young men to lift the heavy stuff. That's the wisdom. No, it's just one part of it. The Revised Version says essentially the same, but it uses the word that I like. "The glory of young men is their strength, and the beauty of old men is their hoary head," the gray hair. Part of the godly wisdom that Solomon is passing along here is that deference, honor, respect are to be given to the aged. The culture around us doesn't view this way. The aged are pushed aside. As a culture, we idolize youth. Look at our entertainment, the music industry, movies. It's all geared to that audience. But that's an audience with very little wisdom. And they've had to sacrifice increasingly in our blessed nation. They've had to sacrifice very, very little, if at all. We see the caution against this in Isaiah chapter 3. This connection that we're to have with the aged amongst us, whether it's directly in our families, whether it's in our extended spiritual family, should remind us of things of life, should give us a perspective. But in Isaiah 3, in verse 5, here's the caution. God says the people will be oppressed, everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent towards the elder, and the base towards the honorable. There was, I forget what city it was, but it was just this past week, a couple of days ago, some veterans returning from overseas, don't know exactly where, and as they were being welcomed back by many in the community, there were a number of members from a fraternity. This was a university town. And they thought that it was reasonable for them to stand on the street and spit at these men as they went by. This is the insolence that is being talked about here. Whether we agree with the position of the war, whether we agree with their service or not, that's just disrespectful, at the very least. Turn with me, if you would, to 2 Timothy 1. Paul had a number of points of instruction to Timothy as a young pastor. Timothy was not completely new, if you will. He was not a neophyte in terms of God's instruction, to use our language. He grew up in church. We'll see that here in a moment. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 1. Paul here is reminding Timothy of some of his legacy. He says, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will teach them to others as well." Verse 5, and also if anyone completes, chapter 1, verse 5, call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois, your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you as well. This generational teaching, to be reminded on a regular basis, to have a family that's grounded in that truth, that godly instruction is to come from those that are older. Not only because of the knowledge that's accumulated, as I mentioned, but the wisdom that comes from it. How do we apply this in a practical way in our lives? Chapter 3, the same book, 2 Timothy 3, and in verse 14, Paul goes on to remind Timothy, he said, you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of. From his mother, from his grandmother, from what Paul had taught him, and I suspect many others as well. He says, remember those things. Be assured of them, knowing from whom you have learned them. Now, not everyone who succeeds in making it to old age is necessarily one that has knowledge and wisdom. But it should be the case. But even if it's not, we should seek out those for which it is, to learn how to continue as they did. Titus chapter 2. You know, I loved the stories that I heard from my grandfather. I'll come to that here in a moment, how I came about many of these things that he passed on to me. But that only comes with time. That only comes by spending time with them, asking the questions. My family and I took vacation here just recently, and as we came back through Lexington, made the decision to call my dad, he was only about an hour and a half away, and asked him to come spend the night with us, the hotel where we were staying, and then be with us the next day. We were going to go to the Kentucky Horse Park. So he treated us to dinner, and so during dinner, I prompted him to tell my kids, our kids, some of his stories. I had forgotten some of the things that he related. Titus 2 in verse 1, Paul talking to Titus here, he says, but as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith. Now, he's telling Titus, remember to make sure the men know they should be, but these are traits that should be, not just in older men, but older women as well. Sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love and patience. You know, my grandfather had a patience for me that my dad never had. But I even managed to exhaust his patience at times. The only time I heard him cuss was he was trying to fix a lawnmower, I think it was. And I was in his way asking all kinds of questions, trying to figure out what he was doing. And he finally got short with me, and he had never done that before. And I knew that I was over the line. I just backed up and waited for him to finish, you know. But generally, he was very patient. Verse 3, the older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanders, not giving too much wine, teachers of good things, like Eunice, like Timothy's mother and grandmother. Again, these are traits that Paul is highlighting that older women should have. Verse 4, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, the word of God may not be blasphemed. How do we learn these? Well, verse 6, we need, as younger, the younger generations need to come to that instruction with sober-mindedness. That is, with a focus, an attention, a willingness to listen. In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. Where do we find the pattern? In those who go before us. In doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, and so forth. Going back to my grandfather, I mentioned the stories. I loved listening to his stories. I learned faithfulness because he was in everything he did in life. I learned about sacrifice, all the things that he gave up to take care of his family. I learned about being a husband of God. My maternal grandmother was never called, never a part of this church, but he was faithful to her. I learned how to trust God. I saw him trust God so many times in his life. And before I ever had to face those things, knew that God would be faithful to me as he was to my grandfather. Speaking to everyone here, your parents, your grandparents, whatever age you are, may not be called by God at this time, but what can you learn from the aged faithful here? What could you learn from your parents still, even if God has not called them? A number of them have been faithful to God, especially those here. Some of them have been faithful longer than many of us have been alive. That's a pattern. That's something worth paying attention to right there. What could we learn from them if we listen? 1 Peter, let's turn there, not too far from that. 1 Peter, chapter 5, and in verse 1. 1 Peter 5, verse 1, Peter writes, "The elders who are among you I exhort, I am a fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed." He's speaking directly here to leadership, if you will, ordained men. But the word really has no differentiation in the Greek. It simply means one who is aged. So for the point of the message today, let's think of it in that regard. Verse 2, "Shepherding the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion or willing, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those who are entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. When the chief shepherd appears, you will receive a crown of glory that does not fade away. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourself to your elders." That's tough in this generation, this culture. They don't want to hear what that generation has to say. And my grandfather literally went from horse and buggy days to the nuclear age. He saw it all. Continuing in verse 5, "Yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble." Whatever role in the spiritual body there is, experience can be drawn from those who went before. In my role as a pastor, I've had to have conversations with men that have simply gotten to a point in their life and in age where they can no longer serve in the capacity for which they've done service for decades in some cases. How do you retire somebody in service to God? Well, the counsel that I got, going to those that were older, was that you don't. You simply transition them from hands-on to being a mentor. And they teach those who are coming up behind them to now be the ones that take the lead. We have to do all of this, though, in humility. Right? We don't know how to do everything. None of us. Question is, who do we ask to help us? Right? Rehoboam got himself into trouble because he didn't listen to the aged. Remember that story? They said, "Solomon was oppressive, lighten the burden, and we will serve you all the days of our life." And he got cheeky with him. He got very disrespectful. "You think my dad was hard, I'll show you hard." He didn't listen to the right people. In all of this, we come back to this aspect of respect. I mentioned about my grandfather being an illegitimate child. It was a very interesting thing in that family history, something that I made note of, and I know many others did as well in my family. My grandfather never spoke ill of his mother. Never. He didn't disparage her. He didn't condemn her. He didn't belittle her. He didn't disrespect her. She was not a mom. Should say she was not, well, what word you use there? Biologically, she was his mom, but not really. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Let's go back a little bit to that section. 1 Timothy 5 and in verse 1. Paul here cautions Timothy, says, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father." You don't interact with someone older the same way you would with someone younger. There's a deference there. There should be a respect given, an approach that's different. Verse 2, "Older women," if I can insert, "interact with them as mothers. Younger women as sisters." This mutual respect that goes back and forth. We find example of this. Let's turn to Job 32. If you remember the story of Job, The men he called friends didn't really turn out to be very good friends, did they? It seems almost that they were waiting for his fortune to turn kind of south so they could use the opportunity to correct him. Job needed to learn some lessons, but it wasn't the lessons they thought. If you remember the story, God, after he restored Job, told them, "You go to Job, and he'll sacrifice for you, and then I'll forgive you." But there was another man in the mix here, and he was a much younger man named Elihu. Job 32, verse 4, Elihu says something very interesting here. He waited for all these other men to say what was on their mind, to interact with Job, to correct him, and all of this. And so in Job 32, verse 4, it says, "Now, because they were years older than he, Elihu had waited to speak to Job." He wanted to show the respect. He didn't jump right in. He didn't disagree. He didn't, interrupt. He didn't insert himself. And it says, because they were older. Even though they were wrong, he still showed them the respect that God said was necessary. And I come back to what we touched on earlier in that Bible Illustrator commentary. One of the things that's missed is how we treat each other will reflect how we treat God. And if we don't have respect for each other, why are we going to respect God's truth? I think that's why Christianity as a whole is not making very many inroads. Most people, they don't care anymore. They don't respect God's instruction. They don't respect him. They want to go do whatever they want. Elihu understood this, and he had more to the point. He was correct. Romans 13 next. One of the interesting things that I believe God blessed my grandfather with, he lived to be 91 years of age. And while that's an amazing thing in and of itself, one of the things I find interesting in connecting with that is that he was never sick in a major way ever in his life. When he died, the only thing wrong with him was he had a bit of glaucoma in one eye, and he never forgave his optometrist for not catching that early enough. He had to take some drops to keep it in control, and that was it. About two weeks before he died, he got what seemed to be a cold, and it just never got better. It kept getting a little bit worse, a little bit worse, a little bit worse. And because of his age, they were concerned about dehydration and other things, so they took him to the hospital. It never improved. It just got worse, worse, worse. And he finally realized, I'm just dying. The pastor, when he went to go see him in the hospital, expecting to have to cheer him or whatever, my grandfather was so excited, if you can imagine that, because now he got to do part two. It's just right around the corner. And all he wanted to talk about was the kingdom of God. Leading up to this, the reason I mention all of this is that I believe God gave him a long life because he honored the fifth commandment, my grandfather. I think the way he respected his parents, even though in many ways they were not respectable, I think God blessed that. The way he honored his marriage, even though my grandmother virulently disagreed with his beliefs, he honored that marriage until she died. I think because of the way he treated these relationships, God blessed him. And we see this, Romans 13, verse 7. Paul here says, "Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear." And notice, "honor to whom honor." Doesn't say if they're worthy. Doesn't say if we like them. If we think they're honorable, God says simply do it. Because when we do, we're ultimately honoring God. When we help each other, especially those that are older amongst us, I'm very careful. I try to be. When a widow comes to me and wants to have a conversation, I need to listen to what's being said. First of all, because of the respect God says I should give her. But also because of the blessings he says that will come if you do this. What does James say about perfect religion? Doctrine's implied, but it's the relationships, the way we treat one another. Because we can understand doctrine, we can treat each other in horrible ways. The doctrine's of no value, is it? This aspect here, what Paul is saying, honor to whom honor is doing, that's part of what we're doing today. We're seeking to honor some of those amongst us that are of a certain age and above. We want to highlight their lives. We want to know some of their stories. We want them to pass on some of their wisdom while we still have opportunity to hear them, to acknowledge them, and to be with them. Today we've added to this special nature of God's Sabbath day by doing this, by publicly acknowledging the special blessing of our seniors. I encourage you to take the time to get to know them, to ask them about their stories in life, the lessons they've learned, what wisdom they would pass on. Give them the time so they can pass along all of that, or simply that they can tell you a bit about their life. But let's draw on their knowledge, their wisdom, their experience, because that will only strengthen the rest of the family. The elder teaching the younger submitting, and all of us clothed in humility.